Hey y'all, welcome to the Lone Sound Magazine podcast, Music, Culture, Texas. Find us online at lonesoundmagazine.com. And here's your host, editor Jamie Siegel.
Hey everyone, my name is Jamie Siegel. I'm a journalist based in Dallas, Texas, and I'm the editor and founder of Lone Sound Magazine. Each week, we're sharing interviews with individuals who are moving our creative culture forward. From visual artists and musicians to fashion designers and producers, we're always inspired by their stories, and we hope y'all will be too. This week, I'm talking to Texas-based guitarist Mark Lethierry. And while I think locally he needs no introduction, if you haven't heard of him, you may have at least heard him or seen him live with the Grammy Award-winning band Snarky Puppy or with his own band, the Mark Lethierry Trio. They actually did a tour in Europe last year. Also in 2019, he released two solo albums, Deep, The Baritone Sessions, and Things of That Nature. We'll also play a song from the Things of That Nature LP later on in this episode. In this episode, we are going to play a song from his 2019 solo album, Things of That Nature. And we talk about when he plans to release the second installment of Deep, The Baritone Sessions, which was the other album he released last year. He tells me about how he got involved in the gospel scene here and the North Texas jazz nightlife scene in Dallas, which is what led to him becoming a member of the band Snarky Puppy. I loved hearing him talk about what makes the jazz scene in Texas so unique and what he's learned from playing with some of these incredible musicians. Finally, he gives me the story on how he ended up in the Wolfpack spinoff group, the Fearless Flyers. I hope y'all enjoyed this conversation as much as I enjoyed speaking with Mark. Thank you so much, Mark, for being my guest. Here it is.
The independent venues and promoters from every state in the U.S. are banding together to fight for survival. We were the first to close and will be the last to open. While we all look forward to the day where we can walk through those doors once again, the fact is, many of us, your neighborhood venues, are at risk of closing our doors forever unless federal assistance is provided. Details on the needed support are available at SaveOurStages.com. Together, we can keep the local music scene alive. Brought to you by NIVA, the National Independent Venue Association, a 501c6.
We're supposed to have some really cool stuff coming up, huh? Like Umphrey's Red Rocks was supposed to happen.
Yeah, that was supposed to happen. I was supposed to do 2 weeks in Europe with my band. That didn't happen. Well, I mean, I was supposed to do a whole tour in Europe with Snarky Puppy. That didn't happen.
Right. Yeah. We were lucky to see some Snarky Puppy before at Bomb Factory, you know, before.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so we were supposed to be in Europe, and then that fell apart, and then, I had a bunch of festival gigs on my own.
Yeah.
Basically, I lost a lot of, like, my band's work, which is, like, a real bummer, because, you know, it was like, this was gonna be my year.
Have you been making new stuff? You know, you've released, like, two albums last year on your own, right. So what's going on with that
stuff? Yeah, I have slowly been putting together another one, which is kind of the follow-up to the one that I released called Deep, The Baritone Sessions.
Okay, so like another volume two.
Yeah, this will be volume two.
Cool.
Which is going to be like twice as long and a little bit more involved, which means I'll probably had to put it out like first quarter 2021. So, which is cool. You know, I was hoping to put out something this year, but, you know, I mean, I'll figure something out, I guess.
It definitely seems like you're crushing the social media game right now with, you know, the videos and the master classes and all that stuff. So it seems
it's kind of the only thing any of us, it's one of the only things we all sort of have to kind of like stay relevant or something.
Yeah.
You want to, I don't know. I mean, I suppose I should probably take a break from it, which I think.
No, don't do it. Don't do it.
I mean, it's a lot of time and energy to like keep up with it. And
yeah.
You know, I need to, like, my thing is like, I have a finite amount of creative energy and I need to be careful how I spend it. And
yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if I spend it on making an Instagram video or something, then cool, but that only, you know, that the star there fades pretty quickly.
It does take, it's true, but it does take so much work to do those videos and then to like post it after that, you know, getting all the details right and the tags and all that stuff. I'm like,
It takes like 30.
Yeah, I mean, it's
both fit.
Well, I mean, you know, depending on the production value, I guess it could take a couple hours or it could take a couple minutes, but
yeah.
You know, it's just a way to stay engaged, I guess.
Well, have you been doing Fearless Flyers, Wolfpack stuff? I remember last time we talked.
I mean, we were supposed to, but all the gigs got canceled.
Yeah. So. Well, you had said, too, that Wolfpack's like the new fish or something, which I feel like was pretty funny.
I mean, in a sense, yeah. I mean, musically, they're not really that compatible. But I think I made that comment because they share a similar type of like loyal fan base that follow them anywhere and do, you know, go great lengths to support them, which is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's similar to kind of Snarky Puppy too. I mean, you know, we have these fans that are just diehards and.
Yeah. Your own festival, all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Wolf will do like Wolf Fest or something. Yeah, right? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not that deep involved.
Not this year, but maybe sometime.
Not this year, but.
How did you end up getting linked up with everybody, with Corey Wong and, you know, all that stuff? Was it a Snarky Puppy thing or?
I got an email from Corey just about the project. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd never met him or actually met Nate for that matter either, but
really?
Joe and I had played together on a gig with a mutual friend named Jans Ingber up in Denver, I think the gig was. It was like a super band kind of variety evening where we played a bunch of covers and, you know, a bunch of special guests. And so it was really fun getting to, getting to know Joe and hang out and play. And then the whole band started just from like an email that Corey kind of sent out to everyone.
Oh, cool.
We all just agreed to do it. So
how did the music video work?
Well, that was all like Jack Stratton's doing. I didn't even know really what I was getting into. I didn't know much about the music direction or how the songs were going to come together or really anything. It was just kind of like, hey, we have this idea. Can you come to LA and help us with it? And,
yeah.
Okay. And so we got to the studio in LA and we're jamming and working out the tunes. And then we found out that we were going to be wearing flight suits and playing with on these mic stands and have this whole sort of image and I think Nate
you're like this sounds like a great concept.
We're like, okay. Like, all right. And that, you know, now it sort of became the thing. It's like I think the running joke is that, you know, it's like the Devo of funk or something. Like,
okay, so I love that. Like, it has to be extreme. We have a funny hat and stuff like
that. No hats, but you know, flight suits and sunglasses and it's a vibe. It's a whole vibe.
It does have this whole like 80s music video kind of thing going to it, which I think is super cool.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, Wolfpack's definitely, they, you know, are into the whole like lo-fi kind of
definitely
retro vibe. So it works.
It makes sense. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So you moved here. Did you come here to Texas from NorCal to come to college, or is that your parents moved here first, or how did you end up?
No, there was college. I was planning on, I was going to try to stay in California, but just didn't really pan out that I got accepted into the schools there that I wanted. So I was like, well,
California public schools, though, they're all awesome, but they are kind of hard to get into too. You're like,
I mean, I didn't get into any of them. I applied to like UCLA and UC Davis and what else? Well, I applied to USC.
I applied to USC too. They didn't let me in either.
but the schools that I did get into in California were great, but I wasn't like super into it. But anyway,
you applied to TCU on a whim?
Kind of. It came across my radar because actually my high school guidance counselor that I was meeting with was, because I had told her like what I was looking for in a college. And so she's like, well, you know, if you want to get out of California, like, or if you're okay with that, you know, Texas, Arizona, places like that would, you know, there's plenty of schools. I was like, all right, we'll see what we got.
Okay.
And so she sort of told me about TCU and, around that time I found out they had a really great track team and I was on, I ran track in high school and was planning on figuring out a way to continue in college.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so, I went and visited the school and just like loved it. Like I was like, wow, I can really see myself going here. And then got in touch with the track and field coach and, you know, they invited me to walk on the team. And so I was
cool,
this works, you know? So, they had the programs that I wanted and I got to do sports and so I just sort of was like, well, I guess I'm going to Texas.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. They just let you walk on. So you did that all 4 years?
Yeah, I was 4 years, lettered three times, was part of one or two conference championship teams. So
what did you run?
I mean, I wasn't like a stud or nothing, but I was good enough to make, you know, compete and
play in college. That's awesome.
Yeah. I was a long jumper and I ran some relays.
Cool.
So, it's kind of cool. I have a conference championship ring that looks like a Super Bowl ring. Wear it.
Do you wear the thing?
I should start wearing it. It looks ridiculous. It's like a tumor.
Swag.
Like, it's like a basically. Big gold tumor with diamonds on it. I don't know if they're real diamonds, but it probably not.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody has to know either way. That's really cool. Yeah, you should definitely wear it. Fielder Flyers would love that, I'm sure. Though,
probably
too.
So. Yeah. I don't talk about it much, my athletic background, but.
Do you run still? Just to.
I mean, I attempt to stay in shape, but it's mostly. I cycle more than I run now.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think you were like long jumping still or anything. Like
that. No, it's not. Track and field is not exactly a leisure activity. Oh. Like, neither is running really, but I mean, neither is cycling for example, but yeah, nobody like does long jump just to stay in shape.
Yeah, exactly.
If I did, I'd probably, you know, be way ripped and look great.
Yeah, right. Well, I was just having this conversation with Quentin and Nick from, you know, Quentin's band, and they have all massage guns that they've gotten and they just like hang out at home and use the massage guns. But I was like, I didn't even realize your shoulders. And he's like, well, I'm playing percussion with my hands. And so I forget that it must be grueling at a certain point, heavy guitars, that kind of thing. I'm like, huh.
It's, you know, that's one of those things. It's like when you're on tour and you're used to standing on stage for 90 minutes every night, you don't realize how much work that actually is until you don't do it for a really long time. And, you know, it was funny when we were hanging out at Deep Ellum Art Co. That was like the first time I had played guitar standing up.
And
it wasn't even my guitar. I had to borrow Mike's guitar because mine.
Yeah, that was crazy. It seemed like you were having some like random technical difficulty.
Yeah, it was very odd. The guitar that I brought like had an issue with the tuning post, and I was like, well, I can't use this. So anyway, I was up there playing my friend's guitar standing, something I hadn't done in 3 months. It feels weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But now you've got some gigs coming out. I actually just looked at your website. You have International Guitar Festival, which has been pushed back like 5 times.
Yeah.
And now they're finally doing that again. What is that going to be like? Is it going to be like an indoor or outdoor?
Your guess is as good as mine. And I don't know if it's even going to stay on that date. You know, there's no telling. But usually what it is, it's half indoor, half outdoor. And the inside is essentially a exhibitor showcase for manufacturers and dealers. And this is like a trade show or a guitar show, whatever. Yeah, it's at the Dallas World Trade Center. But then they have like a couple stages and people just go watch the band. So I've played at it a couple times and it's always a really fun hang.
Yeah.
And, you know, but those kinds of things, it's like if they're not able to operate at their full potential with dealers, then they don't make any money because no one goes. And so it's
exactly.
Like,
nobody's going to pay for the booths and pay for the
and tickets. It's like, it's really hard to social distance and showcase guitars because people want
you can't
touch it. This thing that you want to buy, but
you can see, you can't hear how it sounds, but it sounds great.
Just pretend you're playing it.
Yeah, it's just such a weird time right now that I want them all to happen. I'm so torn because I really want all of these live streams to turn into real gigs and stuff, but I'm also like,
I can never tell like what's open and what's not. And like, you know,
is it Fort Worth? How is it? What's it like down there? I mean, have you been going out seeing what's going on?
I mean,
down
occasionally
there?
Well, I've been to one or two restaurants and sat down and ordered.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't many people. So, you know, I went to kind of a random time. It was like a 2 p.m. on a Friday. So like there wasn't really a lot of people.
That's my move too. That post lunch kind of thing.
Yeah. So like that's cool. But like we haven't gone out to dinner or anything really.
Yeah.
We order in or I'll, you know, get takeout or we cook a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's been fun. Have you been getting into more cooking and stuff like that?
A little bit. I mean, it's mostly just like making mistakes.
Yeah.
And be like, well, that was an expensive failure.
It does suck when you buy like all the ingredients and you're like, yeah. Oh.
I attempted this Cajun stew thing and like bought this really nice meat from Central Market. And then I was like, well, this sort of tastes kind of boring.
Yeah. This is why I've been eating out sometimes too. So how did you kind of make your foray into moving to Texas for college and then going out, discovering the nightlife?
Well, while I was at TCU, I was really, I mean, even though I was primarily there to do academics and sports, I was still playing guitar all the time, you know, more than I was studying because I secretly, that's what I wanted to do, you know?
Yeah. Secretly, you didn't tell your parents that until later?
Yeah, but they kind of figured it out, like, while I was graduating. I was like, I think I'm going to do music, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you got your degree, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so I got into gospel because I just wanted to find some musicians to play with at school. And I hadn't really come across anyone that had the sound that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was listening to R&B and soul and funk and all that. I just hadn't found anybody that was really playing it. And then I heard about TCU had a gospel choir and I was like, oh, okay. And so I had a bit of a bug in the ear about gospel because some of my friends from California who I used to play with had gotten into the California Bay Area gospel scene and they were like, it's great.
Yeah,
I love it.
Tons, you know, epic musicians abound.
Yeah, the music is awesome. Everyone's grooving. It's really cool. You should figure it out. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, oh, TCU has a gospel choir. See what they're about. So I went to see them. They played at the at like our student union, student center.
Okay.
And it was a whole choir. Well, I mean, it was about 20 people. And just a drummer.
Okay.
They had no other band except the drummer, and he was super funky. His name was John Wesley. And I was like, well, I got to meet John. And so we started talking. I was like, you know, I play guitar. I'm looking to start a band. Like, and he was at school at the time. He was at TCU at the time. And I was like, dude, let's play. And so we started a band. I started playing with the gospel choir because I was like, hey, you guys need any other instruments? I didn't have any.
You need a guitar by any chance?
I was like, and so I sort of learned gospel music just kind of retroactively, just sort of being a part of that choir. And they played a lot of Kirk Franklin songs and Fred Hammond and things like that. So that's how I learned those tunes.
Awesome.
And in learning that music, you know, I love liner notes. So like, I want to know who played on everything. And I was like finding these names like Bobby Sparks, Todd Parsno, Sean Martin.
Yeah.
You know, Keith Taylor, like all these players. And I was like, you know, this was probably pre-Google, but you could still search things on the internet. And I was like, oh, these guys like live here. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So the more I worked with the TCU gospel choir, the more I realized that there were people in that choir that had connections to the larger gospel scene. And through that, I started going and playing at churches and like, you know, jam sessions at churches and jam sessions at clubs and, you know,
I hear the church gig scene is always full of great musicians. Like,
sure, yeah. I mean, that's a very common thing for musicians here to do is to play at a church.
Mm-hmm.
Of all types. It's not just gospel. I mean, it's, you know, there's the sort of like contemporary CCM style music church as well. There's a lot of those here. But for me, it was kind of the gospel thing. And I met a lot of players through that gospel choir.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just continued meeting people and, hey, there's a jam come, you know, at the Mount Olive Tabernacle of whatever, you know, and I'm like, okay. And I would just go and then you would meet more people and, it all kind of led itself to going to Dallas. And it was kind of interesting. I had a really good friend. She's still a friend. Her name is Lanisha Fentress and her husband, played with Fred Hammond for a while as a percussionist, but her dad is this guy, Chuck Smith, who is like a really legendary bass player around town.
Oh,
I ended up playing at Chuck's church.
Cool.
And did some gigs with Chuck, therefore meeting Bobby Sparks, Keith Anderson.
Oh, cool.
I said Todd Parsno, and I think that's how I met Sput.
Keith, we saw, he was also at the thing too. Keith Anderson was, right?
Yeah. I've known Keith for a long time.
Cool.
And so I was playing with with Keith and Chuck and Bobby a little bit, and then also meeting Sput and RC and Sean and just kind of like getting over into that kind of crew. And then all of a sudden
they're like, oh, this guy is really good.
Well, I mean, they kept asking me to do things, so I guess they thought I was all right. But then all of a sudden it was like, have you heard of this band Snarky Puppy? And I was like, no name.
Yeah. Puppy, what?
Yeah, so, well, it was actually my friend Phil Lassiter, who also was, I don't know if you know Philip, but he had a band and I was playing in his band.
Okay.
That's where I met Wes.
Okay.
Phil, I think.
I feel like I do know him, which maybe. Was that, that's the same, okay, not the TCU band that you were in with Cole.
No. We're, okay. No. So, okay. Yeah, that was another, John Wesley, the drummer that I mentioned, that was that band.
Oh, okay. Cool. Got it.
Cole, it was myself, Cole, the singer named Yendor, which is actually Rodney Backwards, who is a really talented kind of theatrical gospel type singer. And so we had that rock band that we would play with all the time.
Yeah.
Did a lot of gigs.
Awesome. Yeah, I've listened to it on Spotify, to both albums.
Oh, it's on Spotify? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We can't tell. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I'll choose to let the public know about that when it's time to let the public know about that. For now, we won't say what it is.
Okay.
Even though I'm very proud of it, I'm just not, I don't know if I'm ready for people to be ready for it yet.
Yeah, people just might not be ready.
Do you want to hear Mark 15 years ago? Here you go. I'm very proud of that band. I'm kind of bummed that it didn't kind of take off. Like, we were kind of hoping maybe it would, but anyway, so I was doing that band, but I was also just playing with as many people as I could find. Phil was like, hey, there's this band Snarky Puppy, you know, we're gonna do some gigs with them, they're from Denton, they're like crazy amazing jazz fusion players. And I was like, all right. So we did a gig with them, and I was like, wow, these guys are crazy amazing jazz fusion players.
So all the UNT people, like Michael League, and
Which was funny to me because I didn't even know UNT. I knew nothing about that school.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Nothing about the jazz program.
About the jazz program. I think I said this one time in an interview before, but it's true. Like, UNT was the school with the shitty football team.
Yeah.
Like, that TCU just, like, pounded on every year.
Right.
And I was like, oh, they have a jazz school. That's cute. You know?
Yeah.
Whatever. So I was like, wow, these guys are incredible. Like, I'm a fan, you know?
Yeah.
And then I started to get to know the guys. Chris McQueen and I ended up on a lot of gospel gigs together.
That's awesome.
That's kind of how I got into the fold a little bit. And then it was just sort of one of those things where they needed a guitar player for some gigs and asked me to do it.
Where you're like,
yeah, that's kind of how it started with getting the band so big, is that like there would just be so many gigs that not everyone could do it because, you know, in the early days we were all just trying to make money.
Yeah.
And so if a guy had a wedding gig that paid $300 and he didn't want to play with Snarky for $50,
like
he would sub it out, you know. But then the person that came in to learn the music did a great job, so we just kept him around.
Yeah. So you're like, now we've got like three guitar players.
Now we have like three, almost I think average of three on every instrument or something. I don't know what it is at this point. I lost count. It's like 17 people.
Is it pretty like loosely organized, like your set list for Snarky and stuff? Or
it's actually very organized.
Okay.
Yeah. It sounds like it's just I guess it could be perceived as just some sort of jam band screw around, but like
like Sput, I know he is just known for being like, okay, I'll airdrop you the set list, like go, you know, or something. And I'm like,
well, there's definitely that. I mean, we're all in the sense that we're all responsible for having our stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like learning the tunes and the parts and everything. But the way it generally goes is at the top of the year, there'll be an email sent out with the windows of time that the band will be working and where we're going. And then everyone kind of says what they're available for. And then the management sort of just puts the roster together based on people's availability.
Okay.
And it's split pretty evenly. So everyone gets kind of a same amount of time on the
good
road.
Chunk on a leg on the tour. Yeah. I just think it's so cool that all of y'all have been playing here for so long. Like Deep Ellum, we're super blessed to just have y'all play gigs free or, you know, like $10 or something, which is so awesome. Sure. So what's the deal with Gazelle Egg? What was that club? I know that's like a super kind of legendary place for like the formative snarky years.
Yeah.
You know about that?
That was the hang.
Okay.
I mean, that was where everyone came, and there were always sort of random bands put together. You know, I mean, I know, you know, Bernard and Wes and John Carruth had their trio that played there a lot. That was always a really special thing. But I played there a lot with Philip Lassiter with his band, Countrified Soul. A lot. I was driving to Dallas a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know why I never just moved there, but I didn't. And then me and Michael League played there a bunch, just throwing together stuff. You know, it'd be me, Michael, Chris McQueen, and the drummer TBD, you know.
Okay, got it.
We would just play songs. And there was always jams going on, you know, someone would always host a jam. And that's kind of where I, like, learned jazz, in a sense.
Okay.
Because I didn't go to jazz school, and so I just learned on the job. You know, people would call
me standards. You never took any, like, music theory or...
Well, I did. I mean, I knew... Yeah, oh, no, I did. Okay. Like, just but private... less private guitar teachers, you know, or just mentors, like, you know, friends. I took a little, a year and a half, I guess, of jazz guitar as an elective.
Whoa.
But it was kind of like, I arranged it to where it was more just general harmony exercises rather than like, here's how to play jazz songs. It was like, here's cool chords and what you can do with them.
Okay.
Because that's what I wanted out of it. I was like, I want to learn more stuff so I can make my songs more interesting. And so my team was like, cool, let's do that. But then when I started jamming, these guys were calling these jazz standards. And I was like, oh, what the hell that is.
Yeah, right. So you gotta learn the language. Yeah.
So I had, you know, I went and learned tunes. And I've forgotten most of them. So,
you just discover, like, kind of go back and, like, research, like, listen to just all the jazz greats to kind of just get a feel for it. And, like,
I would just. Oh, Freddie Hubbard. Okay, let's check that out. You know, like, okay, what is Night in Tunisia? Oh, it goes like this. Okay, Caravan. Oh, that's okay. I remember that one from the other night. All right, let's shed that one. And so I kind of would just go on a jam and kind of like play really timidly. but then remember, you know, like what I need to do
this
when I get home, and then to come back the next week and not suck as bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Gazelig was, I miss that place.
Yeah.
To say the least.
There's so
I
many.
I was kind of hoping. I mean, I was really. That was kind of what I was trying to do up at the Independent Trio.
Okay.
Have like a scene like Gazelig was, and it got to a point, but you know the clubs they die.
Yeah.
And that one did, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's true. I know. Would you start anything in Fort Worth, or have you ever done any, you know, kind of weeklies or monthly in Fort Worth?
I haven't really done much. I used to play here a lot when I had that rock band with John and Cole.
Okay.
And Yendor. But and then I was in another rock band project with Keith Young from Medicine Man Robot.
Yes, he's actually going to be on our cover, or he's going to be on our magazine.
Oh, nice.
Perfect. Yeah.
We had a band called the Black and Blues, which was a really bad, if I do say so myself, it was a badass rock and roll band.
Dang, I wonder if that's on Spotify.
And we
check that
out. It's on iTunes.
Okay, cool.
That's some good stuff. Yeah, I was really proud of that. Proud of that group. And we played in Fort Worth a lot.
Okay.
But I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Yeah.
Like I should give my music more of a chance.
Okay.
Here. I think. Because the couple times we've done it, people either are like super into it or they look like they're being visited by aliens.
So, they're like, well, we were expecting a little acoustic singer songwriting or something.
Yeah, maybe. Or like, you know, some Americana country thing, and then there's like it's just you know, this rock funk instrumental freak out, and they're like, what?
They're getting melted. Like, no idea.
Yeah, I mean, they usually it's like a combination of like, holy shit, or like, wait a minute, this is check, please. You know? So we'll see. I should just go and do it.
Yeah, right. I mean, people do. I mean, I do think the patio troubadour scene is not too bad. It's just so freaking hot right now that it's like,
we're not really a patio troubadour band.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I get that, but it's like, it's hot if you're playing with like, you know, you're like electric guitar.
Right.
I'm like, I could just imagine that would just be sweltering right now.
Well, I mean, you know, it's the kind of music that I do in my thing, it's not really like you have to want to go see it. It's
yeah.
not necessarily like, you know, like if you're there to not pay attention to it, you're just going to end up being upset with me because it's just very, you know.
It's not like you can just eat dinner pleasantly and have it like background music.
Yeah, no, you can't. It's not really the vibe.
Yeah.
Thankfully, there are people that do that very, very well. I'm just not one of them.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, and it's cool though for the Deep Volume 2 stuff. Is that just you on the baritone guitar again? Same Wes, JT, you know?
They'll both be on it. Yeah. I'm kind of expanding. I'm attempting to expand the cast of characters a little bit, just Ooh. Depending on people's availability.
Okay.
But it's going to be, I was going to do an EP, but ended up with some other kind of situations that will mean that I will probably do a full length, you know, 10, 12 tunes. And so it's a bit of an odyssey at this
point. Yeah. Right. Would you, do you have any plans to like, would you release any of that like on vinyl or what are
your thoughts? Yeah. That's kind of part of the arrangement.
Awesome.
If all goes according to plan, I'll be sort of putting it out probably on two separate label or at least one label over handling Europe and Asia and then potentially a label in the States, or I'll just self-publish in the States. But yeah, so that was kind of part of the deal with making it just a bigger release than just an EP that I put out myself, which also means that it sort of delays everything, but I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
How are
you going to record that? Do you, are the songs done or how does that?
They're getting done. Okay. Probably the same way that I did the first one, which was primarily here at my home studio, getting the demos. Really what I do with that kind of music is I demo it out about as close to the real thing as I want it or as I want to hear it in my head.
Okay.
And then I just replace the parts with people that do the better stuff.
Okay. You write the chords for the bass player.
So like I'll usually send them my demo sketch, which is pretty full-fledged, and then they'll just take it to the next level with their approach.
Are you kind of like a control freak with some of that stuff or
no, not really. I mean, if there's something that it's like that specific, I'll either lay it out very specifically or I'll just do it myself. You know, I mean, but most of the, like all the people that I work with, I totally trust them
to just
things
knock it out of the park.
So most, you know, if I send something to Bobby Sparks, for example, I just say like, hey man, do whatever you want.
Right.
And he, you know, and he does the same thing to me. You know, the language is a little different. It's usually like, hey man, put some shit on this.
And yeah. Like, okay. Okay, I will.
Right.
That's hilarious.
guitar choir is what he called it. Give me the guitar choir. I'm like,
I love that. Like, how have they rubbed off on you musically? Just, you know, playing with
them. And I mean, it's not even quantifiable.
I think
at this point, it's really funny because I get asked this question in clinics and you know, from students and stuff, like, how do I groove? And I'm like, move to Dallas. You know what I mean? Like,
like the improvisational jam thing, right? Where you're, I mean, like it is something, is that something that you think you just have to, you can pick it up, or is that something that you think a lot of people are just born with?
Well, I mean, it's a combination of both. I mean, there's definitely tools that you need to develop to understand it. I mean, you know, it doesn't hurt to know music theory
or the
proper way of doing things. It's not necessary, but it doesn't hurt, and it can expand your mind, of course.
Right.
But a big part of it is just playing with people that really speak the language. So much of how I approach writing and grooving and soloing and improv and whatever else that I do is just from what I got from playing with everyone here. The Dallas Fort Worth has a sound that nobody else has.
Yeah. It's right. What do you think? How would you describe it to?
What's cool about it is that it's like a third coast kind of mentality. And I mean, I know that's sort of, that term's been used for other cities, but what's neat about Dallas, Fort Worth, or the Metroplex is that you get, there's a little bit of the kind of the West Coast polishedness, there's a little bit of the New York kind of avant-garde. There's the Southern soul, and then you have like this country blues thing and from Texas, and it all sort of comes together.
There's
even like a Minneapolis influence down here, you know. Everyone's a big Prince fan.
Prince, yeah. I'm like, who hasn't played with Prince here? Like, everybody's played with Prince.
Well, me, unfortunately. Yeah. But I was hoping.
It's crazy. At the live stream, they're like, she sang with Prince. Like, he played with Prince. I'm like, what?
I mean, there's the resumes in that club last night or a couple nights ago. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, the accomplishments, the Grammys, like all this. I mean, it's like, and you wouldn't know because we don't, Dallas, we don't, you know, we don't like.
Well, you've won a couple of Grammys yourself, though, which is.
Well, the band has. Yeah. But I mean, it's like, we don't really flaunt anything around here. We're just like, well.
Like, you don't really need to
I guess you're right. Yeah. If you know, you know.
Coming up, we've got the song Nap Time by Mark Lethierry from his 2019 album, Things of That Nature, right after these messages.
The Other Ones Foundation is a nonprofit that offers extremely low barrier employment, case management, and humanitarian aid to people experiencing homelessness. The Other Ones Foundation pays people experiencing homelessness a dignified wage of $15 an hour to work in service of their community, cleaning parks, running free public shower trailers around town, learning general contractor work, and more. Donate, learn more, and get involved at tofound.org. That's tofound.org. The Other Ones Foundation, transitioning Austin's homeless neighbors into an engaged community through shelter, opportunity, and support.
All of y'all been kind of keeping in touch, the snarky puppy people, and throughout COVID and all that stuff?
We've got a pretty robust email chain
going.
Yeah. And so, well, we were involved a lot together at the beginning of the pandemic doing live stream masterclasses. Each of the band members hosted one or two of their own, actually. Some guys paired up and did some. And then, you know, recently, with kind of all the wave of social justice and things like that have happened, we've struck up a big dialogue amongst the band about what we can do, what we can say, not say, you know.
I would love to be a fly on the wall for those conversations.
Like, well, I mean, you know, we actually had one on YouTube.
Cool.
With a professor I don't want to mess up his title, but he's a cultural professor of ethnic studies, essentially, from Temple University. And his last name is Nahusi, Dr. Nahusi.
Okay.
And he hosted kind of a roundtable discussion with everyone in the band, and it was really, really informative. And you can watch it on YouTube if you want.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we've definitely, everyone's been staying in touch, and myself and Chris and Bob have like a Zoom call that we'll do every now and then and just talk shit to each other.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. You guys have, when did you do that the Fearless Flyers video in LA? You been traveling since then at all, or?
Well, we did that. The band meets the first week of January. That's the trend. So these last ones that you're seeing roll out were done the first week of January.
Pre-COVID, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Pre-COVID. And so, but yeah, we were supposed to have a handful of gigs.
Yeah.
This year, actually, and I was really looking forward to it because I mean. You know, it's a bummer to just play that music with those people just like once a year.
Yeah, right? What are the differences in playing with this super jam Wolfpack versus Snarky Puppy? What's kind of the live dynamic like differences?
Well, I mean, my live experience with the Fearless Flyers has only been two shows.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to say. I mean, you know, coming from someone that's played 1,000 shows with Snarky Puppy.
Yeah.
It's certainly a different, I don't say it's a, there's a lot of similarities in that, like, you know, I have to play the parts, I have to play the stuff right.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really come together, but, I think what it is, you know, the songs are obviously way different.
Completely different.
You know, as far as the Flyers is concerned, I'm not really I play baritone guitar for pretty much the entire set. I'm not having to cover a whole lot of different guitar tones necessarily. Whereas with Snarky Puppy, I'm constantly, you know, doing sound changes and style changes and, you know, the guitar changes.
Yeah, right.
So it's a little bit more and maybe involved in that respect, but, yeah, I don't know. I would like to just go on a tour with the Flyers and really just get to bang out that stuff every night. And
yeah, right. Just get it. And then you kind of gel together at that point.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, you know, with both bands, it's like everyone that I am working with in both bands is just operating at such a high level that, you know, I'm just kind of happy to be there.
Yeah, well, no, it is pretty crazy. I mean, kudos to, you know, obviously everybody in both bands is just, yeah, masterful at their, you know, instrument. Do you kind of get any other influences from, you know, some of the other ground up bands or, you know, Wolfpack? I mean, were you a Wolfpack fan before? Or
You know, there's something cool about everyone that I get to work with, you know, and they're all so different. And that's kind of the cool thing about it is that, you know, even if you look at groove music, I mean, everyone that I play with has like a different kind of spin on what that is to them. And that's what keeps everything interesting and keeps me inspired and keeps me interested. And like, I'm always looking, you know, like the Flyers thing was a new thing for me, but I was like, wow, everyone in this band is awesome. This is gonna be really fun. Specific thing where I can play my funky baritone and off we go.
Kind of going back to the unique sound that Dallas has, we kind of mentioned Bernard Wright, based in Dallas, but like, who else were some of the people pre-Snarky Puppy that kind of ushered in some of that sound?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think I've named a lot of them, but
yeah.
There was kind of, excuse me, and I might be, you know, I don't want to like leave names out, but I mean, someone like Chuck Smith, bass player, Bobby Sparks for sure, Keith Anderson. When I started playing, it was like Keith Anderson, Bobby Sparks, Chuck Smith, Jason Thomas.
Okay, JT, which is now your
right.
Who, now your drummer.
Been playing together forever.
Okay, that's cool. So you guys have been playing together that long?
Yeah, for a really long time. Todd Parsno, guitar player. Alan Cato, another guitar player. Those were kind of the guys that I like really looked up to.
Okay.
You know, as far as like, this is, you know, there's that sort of generation. And then below them, I guess I'm just sort of going by age maybe.
Yeah.
Would be like Sean, RC, Sput, both Lynn. Genos, Iglehart and Young, right?
Okay.
The sort of Erykah Badu crew,
yes,
you know?
Got it.
That was like another generation that I was like enamored with.
Yeah, for sure. Did you kind of get into Erykah Badu at all?
See the bass player. Oh yeah, I was a huge Badu fan. So like, I remember listening to Badu in college.
Yeah.
And then that was another one of those things. I was like, oh my gosh, she's from here. Like,
they're
from here. The band is from here. Like, what? So getting into that crew was kind of like a, you know, I felt like I had kind of
made it a little bit. Yeah,
right. For lack of a better word, I don't know.
Yeah. Is there also any other stuff we haven't talked about yet about your stuff that you want to mention? Any cool stuff going on?
Well, I mean, I'm working on this record and that'll be out next year. And then hopefully if we can play gigs, I'll tour it.
Are you guys planning to, you know, your band, are you guys planning to record in your home sometime coming up or?
The next thing will be this baritone thing. So I'll just probably send out the tracks to the people that are going to be on it and do it that way. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I have a laundry list of projects I want to do.
Yeah.
It's just like I have to focus on one thing at a time. Otherwise, nothing will get done. Focus right now is the baritone thing. Once I can get that out of my system, if I want to do a solo acoustic guitar record, then I'll do that or something. But one thing at a time for me.
How's your creative flow been during quarantine? How do you think it's more inspired, less inspired?
It was pretty terrible at the beginning of it because I think I was sort of went into like crisis management mode as far as like, okay, I need to figure out how to support my family.
Yeah.
You know, this big chunk of income that I'm used to having from playing
games. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I didn't even think about writing music or anything. But now that everything's sort of evening out and kind of I'm finding my sort of rhythm, but it took a while, you know, it took a long time. So now I'm kind of getting into that flow now where I can really sort of focus. And
now you have running water.
Lines. Yeah. Now I have running. Turns out.
Yeah.
It's good if your house works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Have you not seen Wes and JT since, you know?
Well, I see JT a couple times a week because we have like a church gig that we do together.
Oh, you're cool. That's awesome.
And then I saw Wes. Well, I saw Wes at the thing.
Yeah. It had been a while too.
But he came over, me and Wes and Adrian, the singer. We get together sometimes if we can and just drink beer and talk shit.
Yes, exactly. 6 feet apart.
Across the patio from each other, you know.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm like, outside is definitely the way to go. I was just curious. It's cool. It's like a family reunion, you know, where like nobody has seen each other in so long.
I know. That was a weird but awesome sort of hang.
Yeah, it was. It was a little awkward because I'm like, how many people?
It was like being at the Profit Bar, but without like a crowd. Like, sort of
that is true. But yeah.
We didn't even talk about the Profit Bar. Jeez.
Yeah. I would love to talk about that real quick if you have time.
But yeah. Well, that was kind of so the jams that I went to started out at this place called Sankofa.
Okay.
It was in South Dallas. I think the first one was on Martin Luther King Avenue next to the Black Forest Theater. And that's where I first met Bobby and Sput and a bunch of, that's where I played with Chuck Smith and Keith Anderson the first time. So I used to go there a lot. That's where I first saw Bernard. And Bernard, this was really funny. I should tell you the story.
Yes.
So my friend Lanisha, who I mentioned, she was like, you got to come to Sankofa, bring your guitar. Bernard Wright is playing. And I was like, I don't know who that is. And she was like, well, he played with Miles Davis and Marcus Miller, and you should know who he is. And so I said, that's stupid. And so I was like, okay. So I drove out there. Actually, I didn't have an amp or anything. For some reason, I only had a guitar with me. So I came over there.
Yeah.
They didn't have an amp there. So they let me play. I plugged into the PA system, I think. Mm-hmm. And it sounded awful. But I played what I could do and had a good time and vibed well with everybody. And afterwards, I think I said to Bernard, I was like, hey, you know, my name's Mark. It was really great playing with you. And he goes, next time, mother effer, bring an effing guitar amp. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, right. I wanted to, but, you know, just couldn't go home. I was thinking, I was like, do I need to explain myself? I sounded like an idiot. And I was like, you know, cool, man. Yeah, of course. And he goes, man, you're a guitar player, dude. You should be the loudest MF in South Dallas tonight. You're an electric guitar player. And then he goes, a direct box? Jimi Hendrix didn't die for no direct box.
That's an awesome quote, actually.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, you're absolutely right. He goes, bring a Marshall stack next time, mother effer. And I was like, okay, all right. So Bernard basically told me how I need to live my life as a guitar player now. So I'm going to adhere to those words.
Bought a Marshall amp.
I haven't bought a Marshall yet, but I have plenty of loud things in this
guitar. Yes. Yeah, now you can be.
I can be the loudest MF in South Dallas if I
need. Yeah, exactly. And in Fort Worth, for that matter.
And in Fort Worth, yeah, or anywhere in the world. That was my first experience with Bernard. And then we started playing together in Phil Lasseter's band. So I got to play with Bernard a whole bunch.
So you must have learned a lot from him too then, right?
Oh, like, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely learned how to, I think the biggest thing I learned from Bernard was how to accompany tastefully.
Okay.
Because he's such a great, I mean, he's a genius soloist, of course, but listening to him comp behind somebody or in a groove was just like so good.
Okay.
And so I think that's what I took from him the most.
Is that like knowing when to like flex
just,
or not
well,
flex?
Well, just kind of knowing the right rhythm part to play, really.
Okay.
You know, of course he's playing keyboard, I'm playing guitar, but you're occupying the same harmonic space, the same sonic space in a lot of respects. And so just figuring out the most tastefully rhythmic appropriate thing to do. And I always, I always noticed that about it when we were playing together. I was like, wow, this guy's playing exactly what needs to happen right now.
Wow. Yeah. Right. Like, how does he
do that?
How does he like tell the future or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that was really fun.
Was Shelley Carroll, you know, kind of in that same kind of scene, or is that more?
With my relationship to him, I always saw him doing more of the straight ahead jazz stuff, which I didn't really do. I was more of like the groove fusion jazz.
The Dallas jazz.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, and Shelley would play everywhere. Actually, most of the times I play with Shelley is at a church that does contemporary Christian worship music.
Yeah.
So I know Shelley on a personal level through that.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I know. Everyone plays everything around here.
Man, it is such a small world with, you know, the church gig scene, which I'm like, is that a thing here in Texas or North Texas, or is that like kind of standard everywhere?
I think it's kind of everywhere now because I think it maybe always has in a sense, but, you know, the typical professional musician in any major market, you know, he does some kind of freelance gig. They probably teach a little bit. They probably have a top 40 gig that they do from time to time. Maybe they do a church gig.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they front their own project, you know. And so everyone in DFW is very much the same.
Yeah.
And everyone sort of had a church thing for a while. They've also done the top 40 thing. They've also backed singers or artists. They've also fronted their own project. They've also done recording sessions.
Right, tracking on other people's things.
Yeah, I mean, that's just sort of the mode of the modern musician. You have to be able to do a lot of different things.
Is touring one of the things you've like kind of missed the most, or, you know, just playing with people? Or
Yeah, all the above. I mean, I like being home.
Yeah.
I don't miss like leaving all the time.
Yeah, right.
I don't miss the drag of like going through airport security or you know, not sleeping.
Like
the very
limited food
sort of things. Right. Yeah. That stuff I definitely don't miss, but I totally miss playing gigs. I totally miss feeding off of a crowd. I totally miss like seeing new places.
You know,
new food. Stuff like that, you know, all those sort of things, but it's good. You know, I have a daughter, she's 3, so it's good to be home at this age and just watch her be a crazy person all the time.
Saying awesome stuff, you know.
Yeah, the saying crazy stuff, because they change so fast, and so it's like, I'm glad I'm around for this particular growth period.
Does she love music?
She does, yeah. She really does. I don't know what, I don't know if she'll, hell, I don't know if she'll do it or whatever, but she certainly has an ear for it, and she loves to dance.
Oh, cool. I love that.
That's her thing. So she'll be starting ballet class pretty soon.
Oh, cool. So you guys have just been having dance parties at home, you know?
A lot of dance parties.
Yeah.
A lot of dance parties.
That's awesome.
Thanks again for tuning in. That was me and Mark Lettieri. You can find links to Mark's music and some cool YouTube videos in our show notes. And just some personal news, we are getting into the final stages of putting out our first print magazine, which is a bilingual quarterly publication on Texas music and culture. So feel free to visit our website and pre-order it, and hope you'll have a great weekend. See you next week.
You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. You can subscribe to Lone Sound Magazine at lonesoundmagazine.com.